You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome or welcome back to Black Hair in the Big Leagues presents The Salacious Show. You guys, okay, so I've got a new friend on the show today and already like 5 seconds before we even recorded, already we're so excited to talk to each other. She is a breath of fresh air and a light. I'm like, oh my goodness, I cannot wait to actually like get to know her even more. And if you could see her beautiful friggin' face right now. Okay. Hailing from Louisiana and with an MFA in playwriting from Columbia, my guest today is the founder of Obie Award-winning Fire This Time Festival. Not Fire Festival, okay? I said Fire This Time Festival. What is that, you ask? Okay, this is in my own words, so she can correct me if she's like, what the heck did you say? It's a huge writing factory for new works by Black writers of all genders. And she's the editor of the anthology, 25 Plays from the Fire This Time Festival, a decade of recognition, resistance, resilience, rebirth, and Black theater. They've helped develop over 80 playwrights. And honestly, it's inspiring me to want to write a play and submit my work too. Y'all, please help me welcome the founder and executive director of the Fire This Time Festival, Kelly Nicole Gerard.
Oh my God, Salacious, I think that was like the best intro. I'm not worthy of your intro.
Oh, but you are. I didn't make any of that stuff up. And if I did, you can definitely correct me, but.
No, you did. Awesome job.
You're the bomb. Okay, Kelly, in your own words, like, what are you doing out here in these streets?
You know, I think my favorite thing that I call myself is that I feel like I'm just building community. And I think in everything that I've been doing is that ultimately, like, we've just been building a really beautiful community of that center our Black artists and our Black theater makers and storytellers. And, you know, for the past year, I've been the director of new work at the Apollo. And it's funny because I feel that I'm kind of just doing at the Apollo is like an extension of what, like, I've been doing at the Fire This Time for almost 15 years now.
Amazing.
So it's really, and it's wonderful. I mean, it is an honor to be able to either be the first yes for somebody or to be the first iteration of a play. I mean, I will say, you know, Jordan Cooper's Ain't No Mo, which is currently on Broadway, did start at the Fire This Time. It was in the Fire This Time Festival, the opening scene that you see. I remember reading that as we were kind of going through all of the scripts and, you know, being very exhilarated and very scared of it. And then here we are all these years later that Jordan's on Broadway. So
that's like, literally, you just said so many things that I'm like, which direction should we go in? Because that is, it's awesome. You just casually mentioned doing new works at the Apollo. Like, what? How did that come into your life? Is that that sounds awesome.
It really is, Salacious. I can't, you know, well, A, it's awesome to be at the Apollo because, you know, for me growing up in Louisiana, my whole weekend was Friday was the BET Top 10 Countdown.
Come on.
Saturday was Amateur Night at the Apollo. And if you got to stay up late enough, it was Def Comedy Jam.
Come on.
So, you know, it is just such this place that is like has such this power and such this whole just like globally as this center for Black creatives, you know, just our Black excellence, right? And cult, such a big cultural hub. You know, in addition to the main stage and the main theater, as most of you may know by now, that the Victoria Theater right next door to it was purchased by the Apollo, and it's being totally gutted.
I did not know that.
Yes, it'll have, you know, a gallery, two theater spaces, rehearsal rooms, like it's going to be crazy. So it will open it officially, it's called the Victoria. It'll officially open in the fall of 2023. And so, you know, kind of like with the coinciding with that, the theater kind of coming online was the initiative of the New Works Program, which is that, you know, we bring on a new cohort of artists, and we're kind of like seeing the New Works Program as an extension of what our main stage was doing. Like, this is kind of like building on the history of the Apollo and us really kind of saying, like, you know, how do we actively contribute to helping to build and develop the next generation of Black artists. And thank you for helping me find my words, our next generation of Black artists, but also to help establish this new American canon. You know, right? It's like we all kind of grow up and we read like the canon of work, and so much of that means that like we were excluded from it, you know? So it is an exciting time to be at Apollo. It is exciting time to be an artist. It is exciting time to be a Black artist. It is exciting time to be in the Black community. I mean,
it is.
Yeah.
Literally, I am like, I love being Black, honestly. And if I had any idea what it was gonna mean to be Black before coming here, like what it means now, it, like, obviously there's highs and there's lows. Oh, it is so worth it.
Right.
And the work that you're doing, amplifying voices, putting out new works. I love what you said about get the joy of getting to be a lot of people's first yes. Mm. It gives me goosebumps because everybody's got to get a start everywhere. And yes, before moving to New York, it's like, how do you get in? How do you get started? That's with anywhere. It's like you have to have credits to get more credits, but how do you get that first credit?
Yeah.
And it's things like what you're doing at the Fire This Time Festival, where people can like get a start.
Yeah.
How did you get your start?
You know what, Salisha? Somebody said yes to me. And the person who said yes to me was Erez Ziv, who, you know, he runs Frigid NYC, which is, that's the Crane Theater, used to be the Red Room Theater and the Under St. Mark's Theater. But they're like, you know, on East 4th Street, there's this kind of like hub of all these indie theaters and like really this indie theater scene. So we're right next door to New York Theater Workshop, right across the street from La Mama. It's like this scene. And I honestly came out of grad school and I was interning there. And that's when we had the Red Room, and it was just like the best little Black box. You have to walk up 3 flights of stairs to get to it, but it was like one of those Black boxes that was just so magical and it just held so much history. And I said, Erez, I have an idea for a theater festival. I said, can I do this thing? And he said, yeah. He gave me the Black box for over a weekend. And that was literally how it started. He said, I had no work. I had to, he essentially said, yes, you can have a theater. And I literally got on an email and like just kind of cold emailed Katori Hall and Germano Toussaint and Derek McFadder and Rada Blank and Pia Wilson. And that was our first year lineup.
Wait. Was Katori at that time?
Katori was Katori. And then literally right after we did that festival, she was like Katori with like all the capital left. It was insane. You know, we got like, it was, you know, they say everything isn't the timing. And I think like that was one of those things. Number one, there were enough of us that were just like so frustrated. And we're just like, you know, and you just always know that you know, if you want to do something new, that you just have to recognize that you're going to have to put that work in. But there was this, like, there was just something in the air that we were just like, you know what, like, let's just do this ourselves, you know? And that's what happened. And here we are, you know, we're going to our 14th season.
That's amazing.
You know, I definitely, again, I was not seeking to be a producer. It was definitely something I found, you know, because, you know, I went to, did my master's in playwriting.
Come on.
I kind of just knew that I was like, okay, well, if I want a space for my voice, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and have to make that. And so I was like, oh, this is going to be a fun thing I'm going to do like one time.
I'm guessing this is what I was just about to ask you, but I'm guessing you got from Louisiana to New York because of Columbia.
Yeah.
And then you stayed.
Yep.
You found your community.
Yep. And that's the biggest thing. Even funny enough, right before I got on this interview, you know, I was talking to, you know, one of our, the, you know, the first playwrights and one of our founding playwrights, Germano Tucson. You know, his mother recently passed away, and, you know, he was, you know, doing the funeral today. And, you know, he was saying, you know, we sent out a big call to our community because his mother did pass quite suddenly. And we were just like, you know, let's kind of like help our brother out, you know, what can we do? And he was just so grateful for that. And we were just going back and forth and talking about how awesome the community is, because, you know, the work is the work, you know, but also at the end of the day, that I think what we have built is a space that people keep returning to because, you know, we're not goal oriented. Our only expectation is that, like, you know, you come, reciprocity, you know, we give, we receive, like, we really are a community. And I definitely want to make sure that you get the chance to come to the Fire this time this year, Celicia, because it is a family reunion. It is a family reunion. Our audiences are the best. We sing in between song, you know, plays. We're like, even, I mean, it is just, it's so much fun.
It's like over like 2 weeks in January.
I think this year we'll be returning to our regular timing, which we usually start on Martin Luther King Day. We have been, in the past, we've gone for 3 weeks. We're probably going to go for 2 weeks this year, just with everything with COVID and whatnot. But I will definitely, you know, let you know, because you got to come and check it out. But we are, that's who we are. We are that's the thing that makes me the most proud. It's like, we can, you know, help uplift voices, but we're also helping to uplift humans, people. And I think that is what keeps us going strong for so long, you know.
Humans.
Yeah.
People. Okay. What would you say to somebody like me? Like, I'm Black, I'm a writer, I've always wanted to write a play, but not sure how to format it. What would you say to somebody like that in regards to the work that you're doing, or how to get involved, where to begin?
You know, so just start writing. You know, I hear so many people say, like, I don't know how to write X, Y, or Z. And it's like, well, you know, the fact of the matter is nobody really does until you just sit down to do it. I mean, I think of, like, you know, even when I write a play, you know, I mean, like, so for example, like a piece that I have in development now, I've been working on that play for 7 years. You know, it's like, wow. Part of playwriting is such a collaborative process that sometimes you don't even know what you have until you get in the room, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just put pen to paper and get in the room, and then it'll start to shape itself. I think that really, probably the main thing you need as a writer is just your perseverance, right? And to know it's not going to be right the first time. It's not going to be right the second time. It's not going to be right the third time. It may not be what you're trying to say for a long time, but it's like, but that is the process. The process is the rewriting. So from that perspective, I'm like, nobody sits down and hits it out the ballpark first time. I mean, if they did, I mean, I'm like, more power to you, but you're not there.
Right.
I'm like, what do you mean? You've probably been thinking about that for so long or whatever. Maybe you were doing the rewrites in your head. I don't know.
Right.
I say you just write it down and then you find, and sometimes it's very easy to start. I mean, it's like, you know, you probably know a great group of actors or directors or somebody to say, hey, you know what, y'all? Can you come over to my house? I just need to hear this.
Yeah.
hear it in front of a group, and then, you know, and then, you know, and then come to the fire this time. And, you know, let's, you know, talk about like what developmental opportunities we have, or, you know, who we know, who you need to talk to, that you should definitely try to, you know, get into this. I mean, there is, I mean, that's what I would say, is that there just has to, you just have to start. And there, I don't think there is necessarily any right way to start except in front of the page.
Mm. See, what I have in my mind right now is like, I know a whole group of Black women in the Broadway industry. They're actors, you'll see them on stage, but they also like write, all of them, they're writers. They write blogs that we send them to each other, and they're so talented. I'm like, they've got a voice. I've got a voice. And I'm just thinking about all those people who even who might be listening, like, you have a voice, but it's maybe not usually formatted in the form of a play, of how to figure out how to put it so we can get it on stage, to encourage people who, like, it's already in them, but it's just a formatting thing. Like, it, you can do it. That's what I'm like, just trying to, I don't know, put words to, or just like, and what I'm hearing you say is just start, and it might be messy at the beginning, and it might not be what you think
it will definitely be. Yeah, it'll definitely be messy.
Yeah.
And then you shape it, and you shape it, and you shape it until, you know, you get down to like, you know, either one of two things are happening. Like, it will reveal itself to you what it's trying to say, or you will suddenly look at it and say, like, wait a second, that's not what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say this. So then you'll automatically kind of like pivot, you know. But you know, I think I, you know, definitely. You know, I it's something I've just heard so many people say over the years. I'm not a writer. I'm not a writer. I'm like, yes, you are. You are. You know, you just have to be committed to sitting down with it. I mean, you know what we say. It's like, you know, everything is like what? It's like, you know, I'm going to say this so wrong, Salisha, but 90% perspiration and 10% inspiration or whatever. I'm definitely saying that wrong. But the take home there is that it's really about the time that you put into it, right? And it's about the work.
The takeaway is it's about the time that you put into the work. Okay, so here's like an identity question, one of probably many from me to you. When did you have the confidence to call yourself a writer?
Oh, that's such a good one. That's such a good question. Yeah, because you're right. I had a big identity crisis coming out of Columbia, because when I started the Fire This Time, I just kind of got pushed into producing. And all of a sudden, like, I'm producing way more than I'm writing. And then I started to get identified more as a producer and a writer. And then I was just like, oh, well, I guess I'm not a writer anymore. And I had this whole thing where I would like put producer, or like say Kelly Gerard, producer, and I wouldn't even put writer. And
oh. What?
And then I know, because I felt that I didn't have the right to call myself that, because
you got your MFA in it.
Right. But like, to me, I was like, okay, well, I'm not like, you know, sitting down for X amount of hours a day and then, you know, going to walk the dog and then coming back and like, and doing it for another three or something like that, or whatever it is that they expect to writers to
right.
do. And, you know, funny enough, it was my friend, Christine Jean Chambers, who was like, she was like, Kelly, she was like, you're a writer. She's like, I'm going to force you to write pages. She's like, you have to submit pages to me, like, at, you know, at the end of the week. Like, but what it was like, what she was trying to say is that she could see that I was, you know, losing my confidence and feeling that I could call myself a writer, because I was just pivoting a little bit at the time. And it's the thing to remember, like, in the business that we're in, you know, we're never one thing, right? You know, it's like,
yeah,
and you find that more and more. And it's like, you know, so, you know, like, you're sometimes you may be directing a little bit without knowing it. You know, you're, you know, some people, like a lot of artists, do have this producing muscle, or, you know, like they have a development muscle, like they know how to, like, you know, fundraise or something like that. But I think we get kind of so caught into these boxes of like, no, I'm just a writer, or I'm just an actor, or, you know, I'm just a director. And the fact of the matter is that so many of us are doing so much of that simultaneously.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I love it when I meet another artist that's like a producer and as a writer and also a photographer, and they're, you know, doing these
love
things.
That.
There's so many more of us who are, you know, really kind of indulging ourselves in different in different areas of the art form. And I think it's necessary. I think it really informs how we go into the room, because I'm a big advocate of, like, you know, don't go into the room, you know, feeling like, you know, you don't know something. Like, don't go into the room like feeling like you're not empowered. Like, I really advocate for people behind the scenes, know in front of the scenes, know all around the scenes, everything, so that you're really going in and you don't ever feel like you're going in with a disadvantage. Like, oh, you know, I'm going in as just the writer, and, you know, and the director knows everything. They know more than I do. Well, no, that's not true.
That's not true.
Yeah. It,
especially depending on what the project is.
Right? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. But I love that. And I now want to ask you, like, and this is just like a gateway into other things, obviously, but, like, I would like to ask you about your hair and your journey and your curls. You've got a great head of hair.
Oh my God. Thank you. Likewise, I was like, looking at yours, I was like, oh my God, sleeves are, like, so bouncy. Like, how do I get?
Oh my God, are you kidding me? And I'm always like, oh, if mine could only grow down. Mine grows up, 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 up. Have you always had curly hair?
Yes, I have. I have always had curly hair, but for most of my life, and it's funny, I was listening to your most recent interview, and you're always talking about relaxers and, like, and how long it takes the hair to kind of, like, normalize itself again, like, once you stop doing it. I had been getting relaxers for so long.
I'm sorry, pause. You got a relaxer. If y'all cannot see her hair, it is like, it grows down. It looks like a soft curl. You got relaxers?
I did, but, you know, there's a bigger, like, there's such a bigger thing in that.
Yeah, tell me. And tell me.
It is really, like, you know, I grew up in Louisiana, but I grew up in mostly in predominantly white spaces. And I'm one of 10 siblings. And for most of our, yes, big, big Creole family.
Wow.
But for most of our lives, you know, we probably made up the of color demographic of every school, every church, parish, everywhere we went, right? And, you know, I think a lot of the choices that were made, that my parents made for us, had a lot to do with assimilation and survival. You know, so for example, we kind of all hear that thing, you know, it's like, oh, you know, it's like, well, you know, if you grew up you always go out and you're scrubbed from head to toe, like, you don't have a speck of dirt on you, you're buttoned up, you know, like, you're have all your hair is in every place. And so I think that, you know, for my parents, you know, coming back, you know, I haven't grown up in the Deep South, and, you know, my father was the first to integrate an all-white school, and, you know, my mother used to pass for white to get jobs, so she grew up very poor. I think that for them, that upward mobility meant, you know, like, okay, let's not literally, like, have hair out of place. So I grew up, you know, getting my hair relaxed, and did not realize how awesome my hair was until I moved up here for grad school. And, like, and I remember, like, right before, I remember the last relaxer I got, it was like, must have been like, what, 14 years ago? And I did it for a crazy reason, Salisha. I knew at some point that I wanted to have kids. And, like, I started to hear, like, about how the relaxers, the chemicals could create, like, you know, uterine fibroids or cancer or something. Okay. Like, it was just, and now, you know, fast forward, like, maybe, you know, we hear about that. And I was like, I don't want to do that to my body anymore. And I don't want to do that to, you know, I don't want to pass that down onto my kids, you know? So it's like,
how'd you stop? Because once you're doing it, it's like, how do you stop?
Yeah. And it was difficult. What I had to do for a little while was I had to just, as it was growing out, and as I was, quite frankly, learning how to deal with my curly hair, I had to do a lot of blowouts, because I just, like, it was like, some was growing out. So some of it was curly, some of it was straight. It was like, it took a minute. But I would never, ever go back. And it's funny, because all of me and my sisters were all like, oh my God, we're never going to relax our kids.
Oh my gosh. I love what you say. And it's so relatable, like, at least for me, moving to New York is like, oh, wait, I can just like be me. I can just like look how I look. Like, because in California, I'm not from Louisiana, but in California, you've used the words, and I wrote this down, assimilation and survival. It sent chills through my body because I've never put those words to it. But it's something that I understand. And I never really thought about that in that very pointed way. God, how, be patient with me as I figure out how to ask what I'm trying to ask you.
For sure.
How has it been for you? Like, okay, first off, and you said it already a little bit, but what is your ethnic makeup?
Yeah, and this should be a super easy question to answer. So I am of Cajun and Creole French descent from Louisiana. So now what that means is
break it down.
Is that both of my parents are French speaking from Louisiana. And so my dad is of Cajun French descent, which means that my ancestors came from Nova Scotia. They were kicked out of Nova Scotia. They went through Haiti. They came to Louisiana. They were they settled the Acadian, or what we now know as the Acadian territories, spoke French. And his side of the family is, you know, is very mixed. You know, we have some of the, you know, they mixed with the indigenous peoples. There were also still, like, there were a lot of free people of color in Louisiana. There was a lot of mixture amongst the people there. On my mother's side, we have Creole French descent, which means that in Louisiana, you were considered Creole if you were of Black and Indigenous and French descent, and you spoke French. And the term Creole took on a whole lot of like different meanings. You know, I'm sure you've heard of, like, there was octoroon, quadroon, a
yeah,
lot of, like,
yeah.
And a lot of times, sometimes it meant like where you lived in New Orleans, like you were classified as a Creole. Sometimes it meant just whatever language you were speaking, because there were also white Creoles. It gets, you know, Louisiana, we can't do anything simple. It's always got to be complicated.
Come on.
but ultimately I have always identified as Black, and have always, you know, identified that, you know, the Louisiana Cajun Creole French of color is very specific to my heritage. And it is a aspect of the Black experience. It's not separate from the Black experience. And I do think it's important to make that distinction, because I think that for so long, what the signifier Creole tried to do was create more problems amongst Black people with kind of like this intra-racial racism that, like, oh, okay, well, yeah, we're closer to white, so we're better than y'all. And, you know, and so I think that was also, you know, if there was a long time where I was hesitant to say Creole because of what it had come to mean, people assuming that you're trying to get away from identifying yourself as Black, but like that not being the case at all, because that was, you know, that was by design, right? Like, if yeah, we're all fighting with each other, you know, we can't, you know, but it's really been nice, like, over the years to be able to see it as, like, you know, like, it's, there are so many of us, we're all so many different things under this beautiful umbrella called Blackness.
Yes, I love that. And I, listen, like, I'm also a light-skinned Black girl, and I feel like, you know, we get a bad rap. People are like, you probably a heifer. You probably, and I feel like people assume that I'm gonna be stuck up and a heifer, and I'm like, no. However, like, it, you know, there is a thing, the colorism within the race, and I just want us all to get along, but also to be able to understand the differences, but also make sure that at the end of the day, we are all unified. How has it been you doing, like, you amplifying all these Black voices and people of color? Have you ever, while being so fair skinned, have you gotten any discrimination? Have you had to, like, tell people, like, hey, no, wait, I'm Black too? Has that ever been a problem? Has it been something good? Like, how has your experience been, Kelly?
exactly?
God, you know, that is such a good question. And no, not in New York theater. No.
I mean, that's a good thing.
The funny thing is, though, Salisha, is that where I did have a lot of that was back down south, you know, where, you know, there was just always this tendency to for people to try to take away your Blackness from you. Oh, well, you're not really Black. You know, it's like you're not, you know, even being in high school and having people say, and there being other Black people at the school and you know, friends, I'm doing the air quotes for people who can't see, saying like, oh, you know, I like your kind of Blackness, Kelly, not so-and-so's kind of Blackness, which was just saying, I like something that looks closer to me, to closer to whiteness, you know? But, you know, here,
interesting.
Yeah, you know, never. And like you really took us. It's like, oh my God, have I? And I'm like, no. We're so good to each other here. That is not to say that I don't know people who have had that experience where there definitely is a kind of calling into question of like how, you know, maybe how much they can relate to something based off of their heritage, you know, their ethnic heritage.
I'm always so hesitant to talk about this because it's still such a delicate conversation and I'm never really sure how to approach it, but I do want it to be a part of the conversation. I would like to like be a part of that or at least help start it or continue it, I should say. But I just am not ever sure how, like, honestly, and that is that, like, I wish I could have some type of panel with Black people of every shade. Mm-hmm. And to be able to voice like how you're feeling about how you are, how you like appear in this world, how we're showing up as ourselves, and get to hear both people. Cause I mean, obviously, like, my mother she's very light skinned. My dad is dark skinned. And I remember hearing her say, like, going to school, like, she was so light skinned, but she wasn't Black enough for the Black kids, but the white kids are like, you're not white. Like, and I feel that too. It's like very like, yeah, you might be fair, but I'm like still Black. Like, the police still sees Black skin. But, you know, there is still like privilege that comes with having lighter skin still. Like, it's getting better, it's becoming more equal, but I kind of would like to, I wish there could be a space of like, I don't know, Kelly.
I know exactly. And I hear you, Salisha. And it's funny because this conversation, I remember like on like there was a big Facebook conversation about colorism. And I think it would be such a healing space to be able to sit in that space and just hear people's experience. And like, you know, I was, you know, I, you know, one time made a comment that like, for me as a, you know, as a light-skinned Black woman, you know, I recognize that, you know, just by virtue of kind of like the privilege that you have, that maybe you don't even ask for it, like that, that you get certain privileges, and those privileges cause harm to other people. And so it's the recognition that, like, yes, you have harmed other people and you have been harmed yourself. And that, like, it is this again, and that this was something that was by design. This was by design. I mean, it's like, if we, you know, we can, you know, you could take it all the way back to, you know, our, you know, the history of enslavement, and, you know, how having that caste system, ultimately, you know, as long as people aren't getting along, you don't have to worry about them, you know, rising up against you, right? You know, and it's like, right?
Say it again. Whoa.
I mean, because you think about like where all of that comes from, right? Like, there were some people who were good enough to work in the house and they did less labor and they were usually, you know, fair skinned. And then there were, you know, the people who weren't good enough to work in the house and they needed to be in the fields, you know. It's like, and that, it's like, you know, you can't, like, those things get carried. They get carried over generations. The thing is, though, is that I think that I think our generation is that, you know, I can definitely say, yes, I have definitely experienced privileges because of the way that I looked. But I also had 9 other siblings, and we were all different shades and all had different hair textures. Mm. And I saw my darker skinned brothers and sisters get mistreated in the same moments that I would get treated differently from them.
Whoa.
It is a thing that we have to recognize. And I think that once we see that now, and we just say, yes, it is a thing, we can talk openly about that. And to hear whether, you know, I think the worst thing you can ever say to somebody is like, oh, you know, it's like, that wasn't really your experience. Like, 'cause that didn't happen to me, but well, you know, you're a whole ass different person, right?
Right.
No. So it's like, so I think I love what you're, and, you know, and this kind of brings me back to why, you know, I was gushing about how much I love, you know, that you bring up this topic, because the topic of Black women and Black hair, it just brings up so many things, right? First, it's just the comfort for so many of us having that, the memory of like, you know, our mothers like greasing our scalps and braiding our hair.
Yes.
At night, whether we wanted to or not, you know, wash days on Sundays, and that it was such like a bonding thing. So that it's so much comfort. And I remember like, love you know, that. Like bonding with some of my best friends, like that, you know, you may not know somebody from there, but you start talking about hair and all of a sudden it's like, you're automatically bonding. But yeah. Then it's also, I think it's a really good entry point for us to talk about a lot of pain points, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's so fertile in that way. And so like, I appreciate you so much for having a podcast like this. To talk about hair.
I mean, already you've like ignited something in me, Kelly, and I'm just like, oh my goodness, you just like, I feel like we've barely scratched the surface, and I want to keep going deeper, especially like, I don't know, especially with these things that I feel like are delicate things, like how do we do this? And I just feel that inspiration coming from you, and I know I have to let you go soon, but you did say something that was like, and I tried to write it down as you were saying it. It's as long as people aren't getting along, you don't have to worry about them. How'd you say it?
I'm rising up against you.
Rising up against you. Mm-hmm. And I think about Black people, how I don't know when we like accepted like the thought that we're just like bottom of the barrel in America or whatever, because we came from queens and kings, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. from royalty. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how did things get misconstrued? And I just feel like we are so powerful. Mm. We are all so powerful. What happens if we realize who we are as individuals, but like as a collective.
Collective, yeah, yeah.
We could do anything.
Absolutely. And I think, and again, and that so applies to the arts, you know, and, you know, I was just talking to a couple of friends about this the other day, and they were just like, you know, they're like, you know what I love about us so much? Like, you know, if somebody comes to us and they're like, oh, you know, it's like, I need this, like we share resources, we don't withhold. You know, and, you know, and by sharing and by coming together as community, that's what, so I don't think it's an accident that so many of us over the past decade are just like, you know, are rising, like yes. We're not withholding from each other. Mm. We're helping each other. Because the fact of the matter is that there's, this is the thing I do, and this is the thing I like to write about. Why should I, if I know that there's an opportunity for somebody I do know who writes this thing that, I'm gonna be like, look, you better apply for this thing, okay? You know, because yes. Why would I withhold? But again, to your point about our collective power, you know, it's like we are so much stronger together.
Right. Oh, I hope. Oh, my goodness. I hope that in our lifetime, we continue to see like that unity and camaraderie. And you're already doing it in your space. And like, it's just growing. And can anybody go to the Fire This Time Festival, PS?
Yeah. Yeah, anybody can go. Yeah, anybody. I mean, I don't think our tickets are on sale yet. And this is where I'm so terrible, Salisha, because I should know this information. Emily has this information. I'm like, oh,
it's okay. It's okay.
Anybody can go. Anybody can go. Literally just purchase your ticket, come down to the theater. We should have the dates and things posted. I honestly do think a press release went out like a couple weeks ago, and I'm just so brain dead.
Nope, that's okay. I feel like you've heard the name. If you're listening, you've heard it. You can look it up and see. I think we mentioned January.
Yes. And it's farthesttimefestival.com to check out all things Farthest Time and what's coming up and how and when to get a ticket.
Do you know if there will be like, I don't know if there would be a virtual component of it.
We may. Yes, there will.
For people who aren't in New York.
Yes, we will have some virtual component, whether that's what we stream or we will be partnering with PBS All Arts again. Filmed our 11th season. They filmed our 11th season and they streamed everything on the All Arts platform. And then it was also broadcast on television.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so there will be the ability to be able to see that. And also on that point, I do think that you probably can stream our past season. I think our past season, some of the plays are still available to stream as well.
Okay. And also your the book is out about the anthology, and that's 25 plays. Will you be doing more of those?
I would love to. My big goal is to see all of the plays published. So this is just our first. We're just getting started.
God bless you. What you're doing is awesome, and I will always like be grateful for the people who gave me my first yes. And you're giving others their first yes, and it's just a breath of fresh air, and like just thank you for what you're doing. And before I let you go, Kelly, mm-hmm. if you can remember, what do you remember? I can ask this in either way. The advice that someone gave you that helped you know that you could fly the way you're flying today, or whatever comes to mind first, something that you would say to someone who is wondering, can I too fly?
Oh my God. That's so beautiful. You know, this is the thing that's coming to my mind. Since my girls have been 2 years old, I've been doing this affirmation with them, and I do it with them every single morning before they go to school. So since they've been 2 years old, I do this affirmation where I say, you know, I am beautiful, I am worthy, I am strong, best day ever. There's so much power in the repetition of that. And there's so much power in saying that to yourself. Because we get kind of like so brainwashed that like we aren't all those things. And sometimes you just have to repeat that to yourself until you believe it. You know, it's like fake it till you make it. Because I would say that everybody can. It's about overcoming all the things that have convinced you that you can't. You automatically can. What it is about taking off all of the things, dropping all of the things that are adding that burden weight onto you that's saying that you can't. It's already there. It's already there.
Have you written a book yet? Because you're just dropping so many gems, and I'm having silent breakdowns on this video that you can't hear on the podcast, and I'm just like, you're getting me again and again and again. We already can. It's just breaking down all the stuff that has told us that we can't. Mm-hmm. Everything is already there. Please write the book, Kelly. I'm so serious. Write the friggin' book, okay? I know you're like a playwright, but also please, for me, just memoir that out for me.
All right, I'm on a sidebar with you, Sleech. You can help me edit.
Yes, I would be happy to. How can people find you?
Probably through the Farthest Time, all of our socials. I am also... Wherever the Apollo is.
Come on.
I mean, I have to say, I'm not awesome on the socials, Celicia. Like, I have to do better at that. But I am on Facebook. Me personally, I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
And then you can always find me to the Farthest Time Festival. Yeah, that's where I am. That's what I'm that's the spaces that I'm in. And I'm usually always out and about. I'm out seeing something or doing something. So.
Oh my goodness. And I'm just loving looking at your hair right now. I'm like, oh my goodness, should I go and like put in an extra wash day today and like do it?
No, it looks fabulous. It looks fabulous. I love how your curls are like so defined.
Thank you. They're not usually. Usually it's a head full of frizz. And I don't know, I just lucked out today. But I've been working on the front curls lately. Because these are the ones that were like straight for years before I went natural. And they're finally curling for the first time in my life.
They're so pretty. I love it. I love it.
I think you're so pretty. Like, it's, you're making me blush. Okay. You guys, you heard it here first. Kelly, Nicole, Gerard, thank you so much for stopping by.
Oh,
and that wraps another episode of Black Hair in the Big League. Y'all, I'm so honored to have such great guests on this show. And if there's somebody who you want to listen to, please drop me a note on my Instagram at Celicia Thomas or at Black Hair Podcast and slip into those DMs and let me know what you want to hear, who you want to hear from. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast, rate it, leave a review, tell a friend, follow us on Patreon at Black Hair in the Big Leagues. Y'all, I am so grateful that you are part of this community. It would not be the same without you. Shout out to Wilton Music for producing my theme song, Love COD. Shout out to Colin Tabor for editing this episode and most of these episodes. And shout out to you for listening. Y'all, my heart is so big and I feel so grateful. Thank you for listening to Black Hair in the Big Leagues. I'm your host, Celicia Thomas. See you next week.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
It's time for today's Lucky Land Horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.